You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It's Tuesday, December 19th. We're talking Blue Jays baseball. We bring in Jays reporter for MLB.com, Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, thanks very much as always for taking the time. And I've been kind of asking everyone, sounding like a broken record here, is it's been a quiet offseason. That seems to be the mantra going around right now. Not a lot of movement at the winter meetings. A lot of college students right now taking finals, and it's midterm time, if you will, for baseball in terms of the offseason. So if you're giving the Jays an offseason midterm grade, what would it be right now?
I think it would have to be incomplete. I think you'd have to send that back to have to be redone. And I'm sure you could say a lot of the same things for other teams out there because it has been a slow-moving offseason. But really, a lot of the work that the Blue Jays had to get done at the end of the year is the work that they still have to get done now. You know, Aledmys Diaz was a nice pickup from the Cardinals. There's a lot of upside there, and the fact that he's under team control for the next 4 years is really beneficial to this organization and really does go a long way in helping to protect against some injuries to guys like Troy Tulowitzki and Devin Travis, which has been a major problem in years past. You know, Diaz's presence will help that and was a much-needed addition. But when you look at the rest of this team, there are still undeniably some holes to fill. I mean, this team needs a fifth starter. It really could use another corner outfielder. Atkins has talked about a willingness to bring in yet another backup infielder. And then you look at the bullpen is a team that needs at least a second lefty out of the bullpen. And it's always an area where you can continue to add. So, you know, I think we've seen this trend a little bit in baseball over the last 2 years where more and more work is getting done in January. This season, I think, seems to be going to be extreme, but that does seem to be where the Blue Jays are going to have to do a lot of their work.
Yeah, and you said, obviously, they have a lot of needs. And so I guess you can help me out with this one because I'm not understanding why Josh Donaldson would ever be on the market. He's such a tremendous player, all-star, MVP candidate, it seems like, year in, year out for much of his career. Toronto has said they don't want to trade him. There's no signs or indications of that, but you do hear rumors still, and the Cardinals are supposedly in hot pursuit of Donaldson. What's your take? Where does that stand right now?
Well, my take is this is the new Blue Jays reality. I mean, this is the situation the Jays are facing right now, and it's going to continue. You know, Donaldson's name is going to continue to be mentioned in the trade rumors right up until the time where his situation is resolved one way or the other. And, you know, I don't think much has changed since the end of the year. The Blue Jays don't seem inclined to deal him at the moment. I don't expect that to change. However, it could change in a hurry once the season actually gets underway. And if this Blue Jays team gets off to a slow start, then the team's going to have no chance. No choice, really, but to have to deal him and move on and pick up some key prospects along the way. The difficult thing the Jays have right now is that, you know, they're dealing with a very competitive American League East. The only reason you should be hanging on to Donaldson is if you realistically think that you can compete with him going into his final year of control. But the danger is you don't want to lose him for nothing at the end of the year. And so the Jays are kind of playing this dangerous game right now. They're trying to stay in the middle. They're trying to have it both ways. And, you know, if the Jays get off to a hot start in 2018 and end up contending, that'll obviously prove to be a beneficial move. But, you know, if they get off to a slow start, then the trade rumors are going to pick up even more. And then the question will have to be asked whether or not the Jays left something on the table this offseason and have to accept the diminished return next summer because of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when teams are on that threshold, that liminal point there of deciding, do you go for it and do you add more with a guy like Donaldson going into last year and you surround him with even more, or do you give up and sort of start that rebuild? And just to follow up with what you said about the division as well, is that daunting and intimidating to see the Yankees going out and getting Stanton, the Red Sox, even though they haven't done anything right now, the former Cy Young candidates, Cy Young winners all over their pitching staff, they're right there with the Yankees in a lot of ways, won the division last year. Does that sort of make them double clutch and say, well, yeah, maybe we should be more sellers than buyers at this point?
You know, I think deep down, it really does have to cause the organization to think twice about its strategy. I mean, just the fact that New York's been able to load up the way they have, you know, Boston, I think everyone's expecting at least a couple of big moves before the start of the season. I mean, this really is reminiscent of the, you know, the American League powerhouse that we were used to seeing in the late 90s and throughout the early 2000s. And that's a reality that Blue Jays fans, unfortunately, are all too familiar with. So, You know, I think it has to impact the Jays in some way, but at least publicly and to start the season, they're maintaining that it's going to be status quo. I mean, this is a team that believes it can contend. It still thinks it's in the mix for the wild card spot if some things go their way. The problem is that the margin for error has gotten a lot smaller, and the Jays simply can't afford to get off to one of the slow starts that they're notorious for. I mean, they haven't had a winning April since 2012. Despite a couple appearances in the postseason, and they buried themselves early in the past. That can't happen again. Otherwise, you will see that complete rebuild. But you know, I think from a perspective of just based on the team itself, it would make sense to sell. But there's the business side of this as well. I mean, the Jays have been at the top or near the top of the attendance over the last 2 years. They've really done a great job because of that success, growing the fan base. And they don't want to kind of alienate some of those new customers as well. So they're really walking, a fine line right now. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the months ahead.
Yeah, let's talk about those fans for a minute. It's holiday season and gift-giving time. So if we kind of just put on our gift-thinking outfits for a second here and we look at the Blue Jays and what they could do to give their fans a nice gift this time of year. And you know, I'm not talking like undershirts or tube socks. A real nice gift that this team could say, okay, wow, this is a guy that can contribute right away. He goes right into the middle of the lineup. What's out there that maybe we haven't heard or could be flying under the radar where the Jays could still make some big move in the coming couple months?
Well, one that the Jays haven't been tied to too closely yet, but one that the fan base seems to be mentioning on a daily basis and wants to have happen is some sort of deal with the Marlins. I mean, it's no secret that the Marlins are looking to sell off some of their younger assets. There's been a couple of guys in that organization who have expressed a willingness or a desire to be dealt, and there happen to be young players with years of control, and that fits in with what the Blue Jays are looking to do. So whether it's a guy like Christian Yelich or someone like that, who would be kind of a perfect gift for Blue Jays fans. Now, the problem is that, you know, almost every other team in the major leagues can say the exact same thing, and they're looking at that situation, looking to get one of those controllable players as well. So the cost likely will be a little bit too prohibitive, and I don't expect the Blue Jays to go on that massive of a holiday shopping spree, but that certainly would be one that the Blue Jays would like. And outside of that, the ones that are really realistic, I mean, I really don't think that the Jays are going to do anything that big this offseason. I think what they are focused on is the type of deals that we've already seen. You know, another one like the Elmedes Diaz deal, where you're acquiring depth pieces to round out this roster as opposed to a big core piece. You know, saying that, it really does indicate that the Blue Jays, more than anything else, are banking on a return to health in 2018 in order to get back to being competitive, as opposed to that big name free agent or that big acquisition through a trade that would help get the job done.
And certainly the development of younger players, I'd add to that as well. And you wrote an interesting piece about someone by the name of Russ Bove. People may not know who that is. There would be no reason to necessarily, but he was named the East Coast Scout of the Year at the winter meetings. He's not, what I found interesting, he's not much involved as much with the sabermetric side of evaluating players, which can sometimes become very cumbersome when you look at baseball in that way. He kind of looks more of an old school method. I found that kind of refreshing. Wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about him.
Yeah, East Coast Scout of the Year, which is obviously a tremendous honor, and he's had a role in really almost every big name that is contained within that Blue Jays minor league system. He's at least had a small part in each one of those guys, whether it's, you know, someone like Anthony Alford or even someone like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and dating back to Marcus Stroman and guys who came before him. But you're right, he certainly is more of your traditional old school type scout. And, you know, I think when a lot of people think about front offices these days, a lot of the attention does go to the sabermetrics and the new way of looking at players. But, you know, what I think the smart organizations do is find a blend that works, where you combine both of those things. And, you know, one thing that he pointed out when he spoke at the winter meetings was, he's been a slow adapter to sabermetrics, but he certainly understands their importance. However, he thinks there's a discrepancy with the way that we look at high school players. And, you know, the information and data that's available on college players makes the sabermetric numbers a little bit more reliable. You know exactly what you're dealing with. High school players can be an entirely different beast. And the numbers and the data just aren't there to back it up, because the competition is so different from, you know, from town to town and from state to state. And so you rely a little bit more on those old school methods where it's based more on the eye test. And you know, Bove was a guy who really had to champion the Blue Jays drafting Bo Bichette. He was pushing the sabermetric side of the Blue Jays organization, saying that this was a perfect fit for the team and that they saw something in there. And, you know, it was through that collaborative approach that, you know, both departments kind of came on board and started moving Bichette up the draft board. And the end result was, you know, a second round pick from a couple years ago. And now he's known as one of the top prospects in all of baseball right now and second in the system behind Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So it just shows that there's no one approach overall in baseball that works. You take a little bit of the old school, you take a little bit of the new school, and a lot of times there are benefits for both. And when you can blend those two together, it kind of makes for the perfect mix.
Yeah, no question about it. And yeah, sometimes fans want those big free agent moves, but it's the below the surface kind of moves done by scouts or whatever and signing young players that really in the long run benefits the organization and gets them back on top as well. Gregor, thanks so much for taking the time, and happy holiday season to you. And we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Gregor Chisholm joining us here. Thanks for tuning in on MLB.com Extras.
Only 4 short days until Santa comes down at your chimney. It is Thursday, December 21st, and we're talking Orioles baseball today with Brittany Giroli, our O's reporter for MLB.com. Brittany, thanks so much for the time, and your time is precious these days because you've been a very busy reporter. First, of course, reporting on all the Manny Machado trade rumors or perhaps non-trade rumors. We're going to get to that in a little bit. But first and foremost, some very bad news for Birds fans and the Birds organization as a whole. Zach Britton on the shelf for what could be at least 4 months. He ruptures his Achilles tendon in what appeared to be a routine off-season workout for him. So, Brittany, let's just touch all the bases here. Kind of tell us what exactly did happen to Zach Britton, the severity of the injury, and how this could affect the Orioles' off-season agenda, as it would seem to be that if they were looking to trade him at one point, that's pretty much out the window right now.
Yeah, it is. It's unfortunate. He was just doing some routine sprinting after throwing a few days ago out in California. Said he felt like someone kind of punched him in the calf. Went down immediately. It was ruled to be a ruptured Achilles. And like you said, 6 months is probably the target date. June would be the best case scenario for him to return. And it's unfortunate because he was one of their trade chips. They nearly traded him at the deadline. And now they can't trade him. Obviously, his value would be pretty low. Now the question is, do they pay him because he's owed $12 to $13 million, or do they release him instead and try to save some of that money? Real unfortunate from a guy who's very well-liked, a really good guy, and certainly had a meaningful impact on this organization and its recent success.
No question there. And kind of take us back to the trade deadline, as you know, you reported and multiple sources reported that a deal with the Astros was it seemed like it was imminent. Of course, it never went through. And the Astros, despite a less than lights-out bullpen, of course, went on to win the World Series. What was the holdup or the hang-up in that deal? Why did that not get done at the time?
I've heard a couple different things. I guess some people think that it was mixed by owner Peter Angelos. Some people have said that the medicals on some of the prospects coming back wasn't right. You talked to Zach Britton. He said he's just not sure why it didn't happen. He was basically told that it was done. So I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not really sure, but of course you can kind of sit there and play, well, what if? And if Houston had gotten Zach Britton, they probably wouldn't have traded for Justin Verlander, and would they have won the World Series? Nobody really knows. So it's always interesting to look back at things that didn't happen.
Yeah, it's always a fun game to play, what if, you know, all the possibilities, all the variables, but we'll never know what could have happened. Well, all we know is what did happen, and that is despite that deal falling through, the Astros won the World Series for the first time in team history. So getting back to Mr. Britton with him on the shelf for at least half the 2018 campaign, who inherits that closer's role going forward?
Well, it's got to be Brock. I mean, you look at it, and now they can't really trade Brad Brock, who is another trade target. But he covered most of the ninth inning without Britton. Him and Michael Givens will probably be the guys back there.
And, yeah, despite and obviously, the two talented guys, but Zach Britton really in a class by himself. He reeled off 60 straight saves. That came to an end in August, I believe, but still one of the premier closers on the market. And that deal, or potential deal, at least for now, is off the table. That's definitely a blow for the Birds. So, Brittany, in any way, can you kind of, correlate this or tie this into the Orioles' aspirations of trading Manny Machado? Because if they now know that no deal's going to happen with Britton, do they kind of, pivot and say, well, if we can't do a full-scale rebuild, maybe this is not the time to do a rebuild? Do the two correlate in any way?
I don't think they correlate. Zach's kind of unfortunate, but the case now is they need to rebuild, and now they've lost two of their better trade chips in Zach Britton and Brad Brock. And then now with Manny Machado, they're not going to get what they think they're going to get. Again, they've kind of lost that window to do the total rebuild. So now do you kind of go for it? Because you have all these guys that you can't do anything with a year from now. I'm still not sure that's the right move either, because you're going to have to overpay free agent pitchers to convince them to come to Camden Yards. The Orioles are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, unfortunately. I don't really see a scenario playing out where you're like, oh, good, that was the right move. I really don't know what they do from here.
Yeah, they are really at a tough crossroads right now, because, like you said, this Zach Britton injury just throws so many things into a state of uncertainty, and now you're not quite sure, what the domino effect is going to be and what move to make or not make, as the case may be. And it's a very difficult situation for Dan Duquette and the Brain Trust there in Baltimore. You've reported that the Orioles are insisting on two young, controllable, potential starting pitchers as a return for Manny Machado, and a lot of teams that have balked on that. Is there, now it's a game of chicken. Do you see the Orioles backing off on that a little bit and accepting something a little bit less? Are they that desperate to get rid of Manny, or what do you think the next move is here?
No, I don't think they're that desperate to get rid of Manny. He's a franchise player. I think you can't give him up and get nothing in return, because what is the point of that? So you can argue, what's the point of keeping him for another year or two? So certainly the price can come down maybe a little bit. But honestly, they misplayed this whole situation. They should have been looking at trading him last winter or even at the trade deadline. I don't know what happened with that Britton trade with Houston, but quite honestly, you look back to July and the Orioles were maybe a wild card team at best. They weren't built, certainly pitching-wise, to be a team that went deep into the postseason. Others thought that they were going to sell. They didn't sell. And I think it's something that's going to come back to haunt them, ultimately.
Yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation right now for the team in figuring out what to do with Manny Machado. So, Brittany, I guess as we talk right here on this Thursday, the 21st of December, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is the, frustration level with the Orioles front office regarding, the lack of progress on a potential Manny Machado trade? What number would you give that right now?
I would say that there's certainly frustration, but I think you got to look at it from both sides. If you're an opposing team, why are you going to give up the farm and all these young controllable arms for 1 year of Manny Machado? So I think right off the gate, the Orioles were just hoping someone was going to overpay. I don't think a lot of clubs are too smart for that. They'd rather just wait for him to hit free agency and buy him. There's no chance that Manny Machado is not going to reach free agency. He's wanted to be a free agent. The Orioles haven't even tried to keep him in a few years. So it just seems like too little too late on deciding to trade Manny Machado.
And knowing what you know about Manny Machado and his makeup and his personality, he seems like, one of the – just a good guy, a fun-loving guy, an easygoing guy. But can you see potentially where, all these rumors and this news or non-news, whatever you want to call it, could this affect him negatively, or is he one of these guys that's just going to go out there and rake no matter what uniform he's wearing or what the situation may be?
Yeah, I don't think it'll affect him too much because it's in the off season. I think if we were discussing this during the year, it would be more of a distraction. But he's got he's probably going to stay. It is kind of the general consensus. And I think once you get to spring training, you kind of forget about that and just focus on having a good year. So I really don't anticipate this getting in Manny Machado's head in April for the 2018 regular season at all.
And like you said, he's almost at that finish line to reach free agency, and that's been the goal all along. You know, he and Bryce Harper, they're going to be the two marquee guys on the free agent market a year from now. We can only imagine the dollar signs and the money flying around as teams try to woo those two. So, Brittany, as we come down the home stretch here, like we said, it is the holiday season, not a news flash, but I want to ask you a couple of Christmas-themed questions to get us through kind of this holiday season up into the new year. So with that in mind, when you look at this Orioles roster right now, who do you think, based on their personality, would make the best department store Santa Claus of the guys on this roster right now?
Oh, man. Department store Santa Claus. Probably Chris Davis. He's okay. Loud. He's gregarious. He certainly knows how to play it up for a crowd. So I would say Chris Davis.
And he's a big dude, and he could easily fit some kids on his lap. And I think that's a good choice right there. And, of course, Brittany, you know, the famous movie A Christmas Story that all – little Ralphie wanted more than anything in the world was that precious Red Ryder BB gun. So if there's one thing, if there's one, you know, precious commodity that the Orioles are coveting more than anything else this offseason, what would it be, I guess, if you will? What would be their Red Ryder BB gun this winter?
Oh, well, it's got to be a top-of-the-rotation starter, right? I mean, they probably haven't had one since Mike Mussina. So I think that that's got to be at the top, cemented in their Christmas list, getting a top-of-the-rotation guy. Now, they have three open spots right now. I don't think anyone thinks they're going to get three pitchers on the market, but just getting one who's kind of a step above what they usually get would certainly be a great holiday gift.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of teams echo that same sentiment as well. And, Brittany, to wrap up here, you know, sometimes during the course of a season, there's a player that kind of needs to kiss and make up with the fan base because they had a rough go of it in 2017. So with that in mind, who needs to step under the mistletoe, if you will, to kind of kiss and make up with the fan base and start fresh for 2018?
Probably Chris Davis again. I mean, he kind of called a media thing last year toward the end of the year to say that he was so frustrated and he doesn't feel like he's living up to that monster contract. So he's probably the guy who needs to kind of make it up to the fan base. I know people are upset because he's got so much money allocated to him that it's really going to hamper what they're able to do. When you talk about potentially signing impact players like Manny Machado, it's just impossible. So Davis has to start to live up to that money a little bit more.
Well, maybe if he's a department store Santa, that'll begin to, you know, go a long way to make up with the fans. So you never know. Maybe he's on the right track. Brittany Giroli, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. A happy holiday season to you and to all the O's fans out there. And we'll see what 2018 brings for the Birds. In the meantime, it's Matt Waymire signing off for MLB.com Extras, Baltimore Orioles.
It's Wednesday, December 20th. We're talking some Yankees baseball as we bring in Yanks reporter for MLB.com, Brian Hoke. Brian, as always, thanks very much for taking the time. And, of course, this time of year, students all around, colleges, universities, they're taking their finals. But wanted to get your take. What's a midterm off-season grade for the Yankees? Obviously, Giancarlo Stanton's in, CC Sabathia back in the fold. So what would be your midterm off-season grade for the Yanks if you're the professor?
Very high. I think it's very difficult to do more than Brian Cashman and the Yankees have done this offseason. They've been so busy, beginning with the manager search, filling out a coaching staff, obviously trading for Giancarlo Stanton, as you said. I think the only demerit or marks you can take away, I guess, is that the moves they've made have created a couple of holes there. They're not as strong at second base and third base as they were when the season ended, but I think there's still plenty of time left on the clock to do that. So if I have to toss something out there, I mean, look, you had Stanton on the market. This is a guy that any team in the majors would be happy to plug into the lineup. The Yankees went out and got him. To have Stanton, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, possibly all hitting back-to-back, I'll give him an A-minus, and I think you can round that up to an A once they figure out what they're doing at second base and third base.
Absolutely. I think A-minus is pretty appropriate for sure. CC Sabathia, a recent move, we just mentioned it. 1 year, $10 million. Looks like that's locked in now. He's going to enter his age 37 season. Went 14-5 last year, 3.69 ERA, and obviously was still a very important pitcher down the stretch for the Yanks. How long can CC keep on doing this?
Well, they hope at least one more year. I mean, he has done such a good job of reinventing himself. You know, it's funny. You think back 2 or 3 years ago, and it looked like this guy had lost his fastball, was really struggling to figure out how he could pitch at reduced velocities. He has mastered that. And with some help from Andy Pettit, he's picked up a cutter. I think you're seeing him keeping guys off balance. He's generating an immense amount of soft contact, and that has really helped him. He's not afraid of putting the ball in play. This is a guy who used to rear back and throw 97, 98, 99. He knows that's not going to be there anymore. He doesn't have to rely so much on the strikeout. He's found a way to induce soft ground balls, pop-ups, fly balls to the outfield. CeCe has really impressed me a lot. And this is a guy who's pitching on a couple of knees that are probably going to require surgery at some point. He's fragile. He has a big brace on there to get him on the field. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, but you cannot argue with the results as far as veteran presence in that clubhouse. He is a huge presence there. The Yankees really rely on him, and I thought that was a layup to bring him back. He didn't want to go anywhere else. I know that he talked to the Angels. He talked to the Blue Jays, but at this point of his career, I think CeCe sees the ability to win a World Series in New York. He makes his home just across the George Washington Bridge in New Jersey. I think this is exactly where he wants to be. He began his career with the Yankees getting a World Series ring, and let's see if he can finish it with one, too. I think that would be a perfect bookend for him.
Absolutely. And, yeah, he mentioned there's some unfinished business with this team, so I think yeah, that would be a perfect bookend, certainly, to his career to be able to do that. The Yanks also pulled off another pretty shrewd trade, it seems, to clear up money. Maybe you can kind of tell us more about this. Chase Headley going to the Padres, along with pitcher Brian Mitchell, Jabari Blash going back to the Yankees in that deal. But this is a lot about money, right, and clearing up space to get below the tax threshold.
Yeah, that's a precursor to something else that's going to happen, and I'm sure that Brian Cashman has a pretty good idea of what he's going to do there. But and that, remember, that was before the Sabathia signing was official. So I think what that did was that increased their budget. They had about $30 million after that Headley trade to work with and still stay under $197 million. You know, we're estimating because, you know, eight of the players that they're going to pay for next year, the arbitration figures aren't exactly set. But anyway, it was about 30. CC will knock that down to 20. Now you've got $20 million left for the rest of the offseason to fill your other needs there. And as we mentioned, they've got two holes in the infield. Maybe you go on the cheap with one of them. They've got Gleyber Torres, who I think everybody agrees is going to be a bona fide major league player. He's on the come. Maybe he doesn't begin the year on the opening day roster. Maybe he goes to AAA, continues there. But you were going to see him at some point last year if he didn't get hurt. I think that Gleyber Torres fills one of your needs in the infield, and now you've got $20 million to go out and fill the other one. So I think there's a lot of different ways that Brian Cashman can get creative, can still do this. I know he wants to add another starting pitcher, too, possibly. So I think there's a lot of different permutations that they could go with. But the idea was Hal Steinbrenner wants to see a roadmap where they can get under 197 and reset that tax rate. It's not an absolute mandate. They don't necessarily have to do it. They've been in situations where they could have done it before, and they went out and signed Masahiro Tanaka because they felt that he was worth it, and they were going to pay the penalty, and that was fine. So we'll see what happens, but I think that with the Stanton trade, with the Headley trade, it's all part of that desire from ownership to Brian Cashman to see if there's a way to get under 197. So I think that if you do the math, you can figure out there's a possibility there.
Yeah, and from what I was reading, right now it's the lowest amount since 2011 then that they've been over that paying that luxury tax, second only to the Dodgers right now. But does it at all connect? Could there ever be something in place where they're trying to clear more space as well for next offseason where Manny Machado, Bryce Harper would be available and free agency? And is that something that is in the back of the Yankees' minds as well right now?
Yeah, I think it's always in the back of your minds. The Yankees, they do look at things down the road. And obviously we have all been talking about Machado and Harper and that awesome free agent winter that's coming, so I'm sure the Yankees have talked about that behind closed doors. But now that they've traded for Stanton, maybe that's changed a little bit. I think that the urgency to add another huge salary like that is probably reduced. It doesn't mean they can't do it. I think that if Manny Machado's out there and the Yankees need a third baseman, they're going to go after him. I mean, they're going after him right now, and I think that if they were able to fit him in and the Orioles were willing to do that, I think the Yankees would make that move to plug him into that lineup because that would just be a lethal lineup. If not, they're prepared to go forward with, they've got guys like Miguel Andujar and Ronald Torres and Tyler Wade and obviously Gleyber Torres, as we talked about. These are all guys who could plug in at third base. with the exception of Andujar, they can plug in a second, too. So there's a lot of different ways Brian Cashman can go here. I think that the 2018 Yankees should be a very, very strong team. And the 2019 Yankees, if you put Harper and Machado on it, I mean, look out. You know, so I think that we've been saying for a while, you may look back 4 or 5 years down the line and say the 2017 Yankees, who finished one win shy of the World Series, were the weakest team in the last 4 or 5 years. So it's exciting times right now if you're a Yankee fan.
Yeah, that is crazy to think about. Might as well, if you had Harper and Machado, just send the whole team to the All-Star game. That's pretty much what you're getting right there. When you look at moves that could be made, you mentioned some in terms of the short term right now. We've heard rumors about Patrick Corbin, maybe Brandon Drury from the D-backs. What else are you hearing there? And also just, yeah, specifically in terms of the pitching staff and ways to solidify that even more.
Yeah, those are two names that the Yankees have definitely made contact with Arizona. They did that during the winter meetings. It's been slow moving on that front. They've also been in contact with the Pirates about Gerrit Cole. And I think that Pittsburgh asking price so far is something that the Yankees have not jumped at. The Pirates asked for Esteban Floreal, the exciting outfield prospect who they had down at Charleston last year. He played in a futures game. And this kid, I think that everybody in the organization agrees that he is going to be one of their top guys over the next few years. So the Yankees do not want to give him up. I sense that they are more willing to give up Clint Frazier, who, as we know, was the centerpiece of that Andrew Miller trade with the Indians a couple years ago. They still believe that Frazier's going to be a very good major league player, but he's blocked now in the outfield. You've got Gardner, Aaron Hicks, Jacoby Ellsbury, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. It's a tough way to get some playing time, and so I think that if they can find a way where they can cash in a chip like Clint Frazier, maybe a pitching prospect like a Chance Adams, and turn him into, say, a Gerrit Cole and fill one of their needs without giving up a player like Floreal, I think that I could see the Yankees doing that. But I think that if you know Brian Cashman, he operates stealth a lot of times on this. You remember with the Didi Gregorius trade, that kind of just popped up out of nowhere and happened. I think that's the way they operate. I would expect that's how it's going to go for the Yankees, but they are working on it, I can tell you that, and they're engaging all opportunities on the trade front as well as the free agent market.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Cashman, I don't think there's anyone better at being opportunistic and capitalizing on different situations that come up. Clearly, Cashman has excelled at that. And just to wrap up here, Brian, one big trade went down within the division, Evan Longoria, going off to the West Coast to play with the Giants. I mean, I know there's not a direct correlation, but in some ways, when you look at the AL East, it's waving the white flag a little bit when you look at the Yankees and Red Sox at the top of the division. But just your overall take on that Longoria trade, going to the Giants and prospects coming back along with Denard Span as well.
Yeah, my initial reaction was, I'm sure the Yankees are very happy to have him out of the division.
Yes.
And then I went and looked up the numbers, and he's played the equivalent of a full season. He actually played 168 games for Tampa Bay against the Yankees, hit 35 home runs against the Yankees. He tortured CeCe Sabathia, so I'm sure that he is thrilled to have Longoria out of the division. I'm sure the Yankees are very happy he is going to San Francisco. But I think in a broader sense, it does speak to other teams in this division realistically looking in the mirror and saying, wait, are we good enough to compete with New York and Boston? And I think that in the cases of Tampa Bay and Baltimore, they have looked in that mirror and said, not this year. So I think that you can definitely look up and down this division and see a ripple to what New York has done, what Boston has done, and other teams are being forced to make hard assessments of themselves and realize that maybe they're better off cashing in a guy like an Evan Longoria if it can make their team better for 2019, 2020, 2021. I think that you have to look at the long-term future there and realize that as pivotal as a guy as Evan Longoria was for the Rays, and really he's the face of that franchise, it's time to find a new face of that team because brighter days could be ahead, but it's probably not going to happen in 2018, not with these powerhouses back in the AL East.
Yeah, no question. It reminds me a little in the NBA of the Warriors situation where teams just say, hey, we're not going to beat them, so let's just wait till a few years down the road and then rebuild from there. Brian, thanks as always for the time. Happy holidays, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks. You too.
Absolutely. Brian Hoke joining us. Thanks for tuning in on MLB.com Extras.
It's Tuesday, December 19th, and we're talking Rays baseball as we bring in Rays reporter for MLB.com, Bill Chastain. Bill, thanks very much, as always, for taking the time. And let's start with some news. Yesterday on Monday, the Rays inked 16-year-old Dominican shortstop Jelfrey Marte, considered the number three prospect in this year's international class, at least according to MLBpipeline.com. So what can you tell us about Marte? Is that sort of an exciting young prospect that Rays fans can look forward to seeing in the future?
Well, I think so. Of course, the backstory on that is that the Twins had given him a $3 million bonus, and they revoked that after he had a vision test. So not really sure how bad, you know, his vision might be impaired, but apparently he's quite a player. So and the Rays must think enough of him that they can overcome this vision problem or malady, whatever it is. And of course, that's right in their wheelhouse as far as like grooming someone from the low minors and, you know, to maybe have him graduate with the big team. So I think it's definitely someone to get excited about, and they played their international money well. They created money, made a trade to get more money during the winter meetings. So let's put him on the radar for a couple of years up the road.
Bill, tell me if I'm wrong here in terms of the Rays sort of in this point, a transitional point perhaps, about the direction overall of what they're trying to do as an organization, really try and get better in 2018 and win and contend for a wild card, or is it more about the future?
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind with this organization is they never give things away. As far as like players give it away. And in this case, they're not really tipping their hand on what direction, even though speculation has it that it's going to be trading all of their players and starting over young. You know, keep in mind, they were five games away from making a playoff spot last year. So they have lost a lot of people, via free agency. It'd have to be a totally restructured bullpen almost. They do still have Alex Colomé, who led the major league in saves. But, the next couple of weeks, we're going to find out which direction they're going. And I think if they do end up deciding to trade a lot of their players, I think Rays fans should take heart in that they're trying to pave the way for the future where they can sustain a nice run instead of feeling like they're treading water, which I kind of lean towards, I hate to use the word gut the team, but to where they would trade some of their veteran players and try to build for the future and have a sustained run rather than going into the season knowing it's going to be kind of like treading water.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good way of putting it, I think. And when you look at the moves that the Yankees just made, adding another 50 home run bat to the lineup in the division, and the Red Sox have Cy Young winners all over their pitching staff. They won the division last year. Is it a little bit like, okay, maybe we need to reload and then work our way back to the top, also because these teams above us have been so aggressive so far? Is that a little bit of a daunting thought as well, going up against what those teams have done?
It is. While it is daunting, but they have to go through that every year, playing in the East. I mean, you look at, the past 5-10 years, what they've, watched the Yankees and Red Sox do in the offseason. And, Joe Maddon used to say, we like it. Bring it on. We want to play the best. You kind of wonder how much more firepower the Yankees can bring in.
Right.
They've never really reacted to what other teams have done in the division. And, even as daunting as it seems.
Yeah, no, I think it's tough to avoid it, but, that's their job, is to kind of look at their own organization and figure out how to move forward from there. You wrote something interesting, I think fairly recently, about manager Kevin Cash and how the team has an innovative approach and how they started using the bullpen in different ways. Wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that. I know you had written about it and the way the Rays maybe are trying to adapt a different approach to how bullpens are used moving forward.
Well, they were kind of on the front end of this in 2015. We've seen it happen in the postseason where they treat every game, breaking it down inning by inning, and not so reliant on the starters. The Rays were one of the first teams, I believe, that really came in and started getting on this bandwagon as far as not letting the starter go the third time through the order. Of course, their numbers told them they had some young starters, and the numbers for just about any pitcher show the third time through the order hitters are going to do better. So right now, you know, I think the Rays are considering some different ways to do things. They're even considering, having it affect their roster by having an extra reliever and, you know, by having flexible players that can play multiple positions. You know, it might facilitate them having an extra reliever. So, you know, you might have more guys, you know, go twice through the order, and then you come in with maybe a core of middle relievers who, you know, chalk up some of that other stuff. But they still say it's kind of in the works, you know, which way they want to go. But it'll be interesting to watch and see.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's always fun to just see at least someone try something new and be innovative about it rather than just always stick with the status quo that we're always used to. As we just wrap up here, Bill, it's, of course, almost New Year's time, New Year's resolutions and gift-giving time, holiday season. So if we talk about that in terms of the Rays and their fans, and you said maybe that we could be going into a rebuild situation, even though that word is sort of taboo, but just getting younger, more young prospects, what would be a gift the fans could get from the front office or off-season moves, something out there, maybe a young player coming up, whatever, that the fans could look get excited about and say, okay, yeah, this team has some direction, some excitement here coming up in the future?
Well, for me, it's been Jake Bowers. And I think the fans are going to get really excited when they really get a good look at him. I know some fans got to see him last spring when he, showed his power and he's really got a good eye. I think this guy is going to be an impact player at the major league level. You never know if, because the business of baseball and staggering his major league start, whether or not he would make the team out of spring training. But, that would be the gift to me is to see him be the guy.
Jake Bowers, yeah, and he's a guy that's been talked about quite a bit, so that would be certainly something Rays fans could look forward to and seeing in 2018 and down the road as well. Bill, we'll talk to you again soon down the road as more trades and free agency moves get made, and it'll be interesting to see the direction of this Rays team moving forward. For now, though, happy holidays to you, Bill, and we appreciate the time as always.
Take care.
You too. Bill Chastain joining us here on MLB.com Extras. It's Tuesday, December 19th, and we're talking Red Sox baseball. We bring in Red Sox reporter for MLB.com, Ian Brown. Ian, thanks as always for taking some time. Winter meetings now concluded. The Red Sox relatively quiet so far this offseason. They have a new manager in Alex Cora. They re-signed first baseman Mitch Moreland on Monday to a two-year deal. But if you're the professor right now, and this is sort of the midterm of the offseason, what grade would you give the Red Sox overall as it stands right now?
Yeah, it's got to be an incomplete, right?
I would think so.
They haven't really executed their game plan right now. I mean, they did re-sign Mitch Moreland. That was a move a lot of people didn't see coming just because they figured the team needed to upgrade offensively, so they would go up and try to get a real masher at first base. But they pursued the market there and decided that Moreland was the best fit. They're continuing to look for another bat. Where that comes, when that comes, we don't know. But this is a different offseason because, look, the last two offseasons, Dave Dombrowski struck right away. You know, he got Kimbrel and Price that first offseason, and then last year I got Chris Sale very early in the offseason. So this is different for Red Sox fans. So they're sort of waiting around trying to figure out what's going to happen here.
Yeah, you bring up the fans, and I know very well Boston fans can be a little impatient sometimes, especially when other teams in the area are doing very well, and they want the Red Sox to keep up pace, if you will. So with Moreland back in the fold, that wasn't exactly the fireworks expected. So does that mean Eric Hosmer now definitely out of the equation? What's next now for Boston?
Yeah, I mean, now that whatever bat they get, it's not going to be a first baseman. So, I think they just decided that, look, the price on Hosmer was going to be too high. As much as they liked him, they thought that Moreland could actually come up with comparable value or comparable numbers, I should say, making maybe about a third of the salary per year. Not that Moreland's the pure hitter that Hosmer is, but he could certainly duplicate some of the power and production figures as Hosmer while playing equal defense. So they just didn't see the value or going after Hosmer, I should say, and that's why they decided to bring Mitch Moreland back.
And, of course, Giancarlo Stanton going to the Yankees, that was the big move of the offseason. And sometimes if the Yankees hadn't made that move, maybe fans in Boston wouldn't be so anxious or on the edge of their seat about certain things. But the Yankees did make that move, and Dave Dombrowski came out and said they did sort of dip their toes in the water, if you will, on Stanton, but nothing came of it. Do you buy that reaction and that the Red Sox did make an honest effort there, or did the Yankees just kind of jump in, and that was it once they were really in the mix.
Yeah, now the feeling I get is that, you know, Stanton didn't really want to play for the Red Sox, and he was holding all the cards here with the no-trade clause, and you saw the Giants and Cardinals both came to deals for him, and it didn't amount to anything because he decided he didn't want to go there. For whatever reason, Stanton liked the allure of New York and maybe playing with Aaron Judge, and decided to go there. So I think that, you know, the Red Sox figure, why bang our heads against the wall here? At the end of the day, he's not going to come here. Now, could you say, could they have tried harder to maybe persuade him or find a way to convince him? You know, maybe you could say that. So, you know, that's the one criticism you could have. But, you know, who knows what was really going on there.
Right. And is there a reaction now, you think, or maybe not a reaction, but excuse me, when you start off off-season moves and you have contingency plans and a plan B, a plan C, is J.D. Martinez always been a guy the Red Sox have had their eye on, or now maybe are the rumors intensifying because Stan went to the Yankees and the Red Sox might feel they need to bring in that big bat?
Yeah, I get the sense that J.D. Martinez has been close to the top of their list, you know, the entire offseason. I think they decided they would maybe pursue a trade for a bat first, just because it might be a little more cost effective, but that doesn't seem to be happening. So, yeah, Martinez is high on their list. I mean, the delay here is that I think that Scott Boras is looking for maybe 7 years for J.D. Martinez, and the Red Sox just doesn't seem like they're comfortable going 7 years, maybe $30 million a year. So I think that they're trying to get this down to 4 or 5 years, and it's just a matter of how the market shapes up for J.D. Martinez. And if some other team comes out of the woodwork and does offer him the 7 years that he's looking for, you know, maybe then the Red Sox decide it is worth it to jump in here. So I think that all that is ongoing. You see a lot of these Scott Boras clients end up signing in January. That could be the case again this year with J.D. Martinez. Dave Dombrowski has just decided he's going to be patient on this and see if they can get him at a price that they believe is a little more reasonable. Otherwise, if they were just going to throw caution to the wind, I think they would have signed him already.
Right, and that seems to be the mantra sometimes with Scott Boras, is play the waiting game and see if the price can come down a little bit if people aren't offering that 7 years at $30 million a year. But the Red Sox do lack power in that lineup we saw last year from just if they stand pat. Now we hear Hanley Ramirez rumors, and he was one of the guys that did hit over 20 homers, so where is that power going to come from? Is it rejuvenation years from guys like Betts and Bogarts, or where does that power in the middle of the lineup come from?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of guys in that lineup they feel like can get more home runs from. And Xander Bogarts would be at the top of the list. Jackie Bradley Jr., even Mookie Betts, Hanley Ramirez, if he could stay healthy, could hit a few more home runs than he did last year. Unless they're going to have Rafael Devers for a full season. They only had him for 2 months last year. So, look, that could be 30 to 35 home runs right there. So they do, and Ben and Sandy, you know, who knows? You know, I tend to think he's going to stick where he was last year and be kind of a 20 to 25 home run guy. But, you know, they'll see how that evolves too. But I think they do feel that there is some more power in that lineup than they showed last year. But at the same time, they want to add to it too and go out and get a bat.
And, of course, it is gift-giving season, holiday season right now. If there's some names maybe not on the radar, we've heard J.D. Martinez, of course, Stanton now with the Yankees, but other names out there, whether in the lineup or pitching staff, that the Red Sox fans could get as a nice gift, say, this time of year from their front office, who would that be? Who else is out there that the Red Sox are looking at maybe that we haven't heard a lot about right now?
Yeah, I mean, you've heard a little bit about Kyle Schwarber and Joey Votto. You know, Votto has the no trade clause. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but it could be something they explore. You never know. And we've heard about Abreu, Kyle Schwarber, perhaps. So there's some guys out there, and I think Dombrowski is continuing to balance the trade market and the free agent market, and just hasn't been able to find the right fit yet. But he feels that he came off the line the other day. There is no deadline in the offseason. It's not like the trading deadline where, you know, you have to make a deal by July 31st. In this case, they have until the start of spring training, and they think that at some point they're going to be able to make the move they want to make, and they're just very willing to be patient right now. As hard as that is for fans right now to be patient. That's what the Red Sox feel they have to be.
Definitely, and it is funny to think about. They did win the division. Maybe the fans should just remind themselves of that sometimes. So it's not like they're coming out of the basement of the division. They did win the division last year. But I'll end on this one, Ian. Just overall philosophy when the Red Sox look at it right now in terms of the Yankees, obviously just 50 home run hitters in the middle of that lineup. It's daunting. It's intimidating in some ways. But do you think Dave Dombrowski looks at it a little bit like, hey, well, we actually have a better pitching staff as it stands now. We have better fielding overall. We have as much speed. Is there that sense? Well, if we don't have as much power, we can't match that power anyway. Let's improve in other areas and try and take advantage of that.
Yeah, it could be. But, you know, I think that they feel pretty good about their pitching right now. And they really do feel they need just that one more bat, maybe just that one impact bat. And I think once they get that, if they get that, I think then they're going to feel pretty good about the team and how they measure up against the Yankees. And I think it's going to be certainly a great rivalry next year. And I think everybody's looking forward to seeing how this plays out. And it kind of almost brings a little juice back to this with, with Stan playing with Judge and the Yankees having like this dream team lineup, almost like they used to have when the Red Sox used to be the underdog. It feels like the roles have been kind of reversed in recent years. So I think Red Sox fans might get a little bit of their edge back, in this situation.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's like in Boston, Dan Shaughnessy, the evil empire might be back with the Yankees. So now the Red Sox can play the young upstart heroes, if you will, coming through again. So, yeah, it might bring some juice back in there. Ian, thanks so much, as always, for taking the time, my friend. We really appreciate it. Happy holidays to you.
You also. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks, Ian. Ian Brown joining us here on MLB.com Extras.